Yeah, so we're going to be starting from the beginning of chapter 15, Sefer Shoftim. We'll have to just have a little recap of what we did last week, because it will lead right into this week's episode. So, last week we had the whole story where Shimshon finds a woman, Timnah, who he takes a liking to, and he wants to marry her, which he does. And in the second half of the parak, he issued a challenge to all those who attended his wedding or his sheva brachos or the pre-party. It wasn't clear exactly, you know, when he issued this challenge, but he gave them a riddle. And he said that if you answer the riddle, I'll give you each sheets and shirts and different things, and if you don't, then each of you 30 people will give me one. And in the end, they couldn't figure out the riddle, so they got Shimshon's wife to convince him, seduce him into telling her the answer to the riddle, and then they were able to answer it, and Shimshon had to give them the reward, which he felt slighted that, you know, it was kind of cheap the way that they won it, and therefore he went to Ashkelon and found some other men, pussy men, and killed them and took their clothes and gave that over to these men as their reward. Now, it seems that, you know, his whole intent here was to rile up the Plishtim, with, you know, issuing the riddle, and he's trying to to'anahu mevakesh, we saw at the beginning of the parak, that he's looking for an excuse or reason to fight the Plishtim. Alright. So at the end of the parak, I guess so. Seems like it was a big deal for them. At the end of the parak, so in the very last pasuk chas, it says that Tehi Isha Shimshon Lemeirei Ehu, and the wife of Shimshon was to one of his friends, Asher Rei Olo, that was one of the Yishushbinim, that was one of the, you know, bridegroom, one of the attendants at the wedding was supposed to be a friend, and she ends up marrying this guy.
Wait. He was still married to this woman?
So that seems to be that, you know, she just, like, walked off and left Shimshon and married this other guy. In fact, some of Farshim say that it was because of her relationship with this guy that she was able to be convinced to seduce Shimshon into telling him the riddle, you know, that maybe she already had an ongoing relationship with this other guy, and that was what helped convince.
So it was never really a good marriage between the two.
No, it didn't seem to be. It didn't last very long. Also, it lasting, you know, at most 7 days. Because right after Shimshon, you know, right after she tells them the riddle and Shimshon realizes, so he says, that's it, I'm going home, I don't want anything to do with you, and then she marries this other guy. Okay. It would seem not, as we're about to see. That they, it would seem that there was no divorce. Because next parak begins, parak tesvav, pasuk aleph, vayehi miyamim bimeket tirchitim, and it was after a period of days, period of time, or some say it was the end of a year, in the days of the wheat harvest, which is going to be important. It's harvest time. There's a lot of grain standing in the field. Vayitko Shimshon es ishto bigadi izim. Shimshon decided to go back to his wife and to, you know, vayifkod, which means remember, but more than just remember, it means he gave her something. He gave her gedi izin, he gave her a goat, a kid, vayomer, and he said, I guess he sent it to her, and he said, avoa el ishi hechadra, let me be with my wife, and her father did not allow him to come. So he wanted to take his wife back and live with her. The woman's father, his father-in-law, would not let him. And her father said, Amar amarti ki sano senesa. It's very clear that you hate her. And therefore I gave her to one of your friends. Hello, Achota Haktana Tova Mimena. I have a better girl for you. Her little sister. Her younger sister is even better than her. Her midos, wow. They're unbelievable. Tehi na lechotachtea. Please let her be in her stead. Let her marry you instead. Vayomerla and Shimshon said to them, Mikesi hapa mi polishtim. He said, that's it. This is it. It's over. Now I am queen of the Plishtim. Meaning...
But wait a minute. He was Plishtim, right?
Yeah.
His first wife.
Both of these. So he's saying...
And his father-in-law was a Plishtim.
Right. So he's saying...
I don't understand it.
So he's saying, that's it. Now I have enough reason to really fight the Plishtim. You're taking my wife away from me, you know, and you guys think this is okay. Now I really have an excuse to strike at the Plishtim. Yosanim imam ra, because I'm going to do bad by them. Up till now, you know, I didn't necessarily have the it wasn't necessarily just for me to attack them. But after this, now I can finally really strike at the Plishtim. And remember, he's been looking for this. Again, why this is justification to strike at the Plishtim, I'm not sure,
stole his wife from him.
Right, and I guess it's being, they're not stopping them from doing this. No, I'm saying it's just, you know, one woman and one guy and one father, so now I'm going to kill everyone, but maybe because nobody else stepped in, and...
He told the Plishtim, you plowed with my calf. In other words, she had already been rendered treacherous by the other police team.
Oh, his wife?
His wife. But you plowed with my calf. Had you not plowed with my calf, you would not have solved my riddle.
He's not coming because of the riddle, even. Right? The riddle wasn't enough excuse to really, you know, do damage. But now that you've taken my wife away from me, so now, this is in din. I have the right now to strike at the pussy. What? Yeah, no, he left her.
But that was after she had already betrayed him.
Perhaps, you know, that's not clear in the psukim, but it depends if you're saying because of that cosmic cloud of my calf. Okay, so I think there's different. Some of our sim learn that means that she had a relationship with someone, but others I think just mean that you used my wife to get the riddle out of me.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. So there was treachery on the part of the police team.
Right. Okay.
It came between a man and his wife. They caused the wife to betray the husband. That sounds like the cause for resentment.
Okay. So although again at that time he didn't, you know, decide to that this is enough. He went and killed 30 men, but that was not, you know. Yeah, he just needed their shirt. But now, a year later or sometime later, when he comes back and he wants his wife back, and they refuse, and they've given her father's giving her to a different man.
Why would he think that after all this other stuff, that he would be able to get her back?
She was still married to him. So
yeah, but I mean they were separated for quite some time apparently.
It doesn't seem otherwise he wouldn't be allowed to remarry her. I mean, well, there's two issues here. One is that if he was divorced from her and then she married someone else, so you're not allowed to remarry your divorced wife once she's married someone else. Machzer grushasa.
Yeah.
On the other hand, she's anyways forbidden to him, because when someone commits adultery, so she becomes forbidden both to the person that she committed adultery with and to her husband. So, yeah, I wasn't sure. I was bothered by that question. I'm not sure what, you know, on what halachic grounds he would have the right to remarry her. And again, we see in the Mefarshim and Chazal that we assume that, you know, Shimshon was a tzaddik and that he, you know, he behaved within the rules of halacha.
Perhaps those laws didn't apply to a Philistine woman, a non-Jewish woman.
Well, she had converted, but perhaps if she, perhaps adultery with a non-Jewish man, I don't know, won't render her forbidden to her Jewish husband. I'm
not
sure.
The whole thing was a disastrous marriage to start with.
That's true.
Right? And so there was really not much. I mean, he met her, he says, I like you, that's it, boom. And they wind up getting married in a short order. Okay? So there wasn't a whole lot of interaction to know, get to know each other, et cetera.
No.
So she may have been also manipulated by the push him to begin with.
Okay.
That but she was going to be a Trojan horse.
Yeah. It certainly. Okay. Yeah. That's all possible. So he, basically, at the end of the day, Shimshon feels now he has the right to fight the push him.
Right.
Pasuk Dalet Vayelech Shimshon. There's a fascinating little piece here. Shimshon went and he captured 300 foxes. Vayikach lapidim, and he took torches. Vayefen zanov el zanov, and he turned the foxes tail to tail, backwards, and I guess tied them. Vayosim lapid echad ben shnei haznavos. And he put a torch between the two tails.
Wow.
So he went and he got 300 foxes, tied their tails together, and tied a torch in between the tails. Vayaver eish palapidim, and he set fire to the torches. Vayishalach bekamos plishtim, and he sent them out into the field of the plishtim. Vayaber Mikadish Vyadkama Vyadkaran Zayat, and he burnt up from the Gadish, which is the straw piles, it's already been harvested. Vyadkama and the standing grain, that which was not yet harvested, Vyadkaran Zayat, as well as the, I guess those are two things, the kerem, which is...
You said olive trees.
Olive trees, okay, kerem also could be vineyards, zayas, and olive trees. So he, everything, you know, this was he destroyed all of the, remember it was the harvest season, he destroyed all of the supplies using these walking fire bombs. Now, obviously, they're not going to be happy with him. Now, why would he do this? Why foxes? What's the significance of this? I'm not sure. Yeah, I think 30 shirts was just because there were 30 people at his party. Yeah, I'm not sure if those are. I'm not sure if those two are related. So very good. So that's the question. So why would he capture foxes? So part of the question is, like you're saying, that the fox is one of the smartest animals. you know, the hardest to catch. And he should have, you know, it would have been much easier to just, like, you know, get some goats or cows, or I don't know, you know, something, something that's just, you know, slower and less foxy, less, you know, juicy. So, so why did he choose the foxes? So, just on a more, so the Gemara says, and the Radak works with this, and I don't really know too much about foxes, but the Gemara says that foxes are chozer la'achora. They walk backwards. They back up. Rashi says that that means that when you capture a fox, it doesn't run away, turn around and run. It backs up, whining.
They run. No, they run the other way.
Instead of running around.
They run the other way. When they see you coming, they run the other way.
So, yeah. So,
yeah, but I don't know if that's true, but here's what it says here. According
to... I'll probably get to what it says there, chances are. But, So the foxes, Mara says they walk backwards. So, the Radak says simply, you know, for his plan here, which was to tie the tails together, so he needed animals that would not run, I guess if they would run forward, so either he wouldn't be able to tie them together, even if he would tie them together, they would separate by using animals that back up, so that would keep everything together and keep the torch in place, and he would be able to wreak havoc. So it's based on the Gemara, and the Radak is taking what the Gemara says and sort of giving a stock approach. The Gemara says something else. The Gemara says that Shimshon was trying to symbolize something here. Shimshon chose foxes symbolic of, because foxes walk backwards, so that symbolizes, you know, walking back your promise. And as we had in this week's Parsha, so Avram and Avimelech, who is the forefather of the Plishtim, make a bris, they make a covenant, and I guess part of that covenant is they're not going to attack each other. And the Plishtim are the ones to break the covenant. Remember, this is the first... The Plishtim are going to show up over and over again in the rest of Navi, in the rest of, you know, say, certainly with David HaMelech and Shmuel, and we're going to see a lot of the Plishtim, but this is really the first that we've seen of them, is this period of time where they are ruling over the Jewish people. So the Gemara says that Yavo Misha Chozer Le'Achorav, the fox that backs up, should come and Yipara Miplishtim Shechazru Mishvuasam, and should take revenge and pay back the Plishtim who went backwards on their promise.
Pretty much what they wrote up here.
Yeah, I imagine. And the Marsha just points out, the Marsha and the Gemara add that that was also symbolic of turning their tails together, that he was hinting to them that you guys went backwards on your Shavuah, so now we have the right to turn backwards on our end of the covenant. Once the covenant is broken, so we don't have to keep our side either, and just like you walk backwards, so we're going to walk backwards also on our side of the covenant, and that's why I'm going to attack you. That's why I am attacking you with these foxes. So that was what Shimshon was symbolizing. Now, there's a whole discussion about in Shulchan Aruch about what you're allowed to use animals for. When are you allowed to cause tsar, to cause pain to animals? Tsar balei chayim. Right? So, actually, Rabbi Grossman spoke about this in a lecture a little while back. So, the the Chalkas Yaakov was asked about this. Are you allowed to cause pain to animals for human need? And he said that the Ramah Paskin, based on the Truma Sadeshin, that anything that's needed for a person, whether it's for refuah, for to cure something, or for any other need, there's no din of Tsar Bali Chaim. You're allowed to use animals for whatever a human might need. However, right, so then the Ramah adds, he says that's why you're allowed to pull out feathers from geese. And he says, Mikomakom ha'olam nizharim mishumachzaria. Still, people, the world is careful out of, not to be cruel and not to become cruel. So I guess, right, that would be trying to minimize the pain. Yeah. So Rabbi Grossman spoke about that, and you'll have to go online to the recording of the lecture, and because he spoke about that. That. Yeah, I'm not sure.
More painful than them, but rather affecting you.
I'm not sure. So in this whole discussion, exactly what the parameters are, when you are allowed to, when you're not allowed to. So the Chalkas Yaakov quotes from a Hagon Tzurlazim, who wanted to bring a proof from this little episode with Shimshon that you're allowed to do Tzar Bali Chaim for any human need. Because look what Shimshon did. He tied 300 foxes together and lit them on fire. And, well, he didn't light them on fire, but I'm sure they got burned in the process. So that's a tremendous Tzar Bali Chaim. And he says, and certainly Shimshon wouldn't have done it if it wasn't permitted, because he was an Adam Gadol, Chazal call him a tzaddik, he had Ruach HaKodesh, so it can't be that he would have done something that was asur, that was forbidden. So we seem to have a proof from Shimshon that Tzar Bali Chaim is permitted for whatever a person, any human needs. So that was the proof that this rabbi wanted to bring. And the Chalkas Yaakov, in this whole discussion, it's a long tshuva, but in this particular point, he thought that that wasn't a good proof. Because, he says, the situation of Shimshon was unique. He says at that time, the Plishtim were ruling over the Jewish people. And Shimshon here was basically fighting what we call a milchemes mitzvah. It's a milchama that's a mitzvah. It's a war that's a mitzvah. And in such a situation, certain halachos are suspended. There's a different set of rules during milchemes mitzvah. And the Rambam, in describing what's considered a milchemes mitzvah, one of the things he mentions is Ezras Yisrael Miyad Tzar Sheba Aleihem, the protection of the Jewish people against an enemy that's come upon them. So this would be, says the Chalkas Yaakov, a milchemes mitzvah. And so it has different rules, and that's perhaps why Shimshon was allowed to do this in this situation. But you can't bring a raya, you can't bring a proof from here to other situations, general situations, that Tzar Bali Chaim would be permitted for any human need. So that's just Tok Svarov in the Tshuva. He deals with this as a possible proof and pushes it aside, and we have to look further at the rest of the Tshuva to see, how he concludes and how he rules. Okay, Pasuk Vav. Vayomru Plishtim. And the Plishtim said, Mi asah zot? Who did this? Vayomru, and they said, I guess, others saw, Shimshon, it was Shimshon, Chasan HaTimni, the father-in-law of that Timni guy, that guy from Timnas. because he took Shimshon's wife and gave him to a different guy, to a friend. That's why Shimshon did it. Vayalu Plishtim, and the Plishtim went up. Vayistrifu Osav Yesavi Avoesh, and they burned this woman and her father in fire. So the Plishtim themselves take retribution against this woman and her father for inciting Shimshon to this great violence against them. And again, they were looking to appease Shimshon. Vayomer lahem Shimshon. And Shimshon said to them, Im tasun kazok, if you do something like this, ki im nikamti vachem v'achar echtal, then I will have revenge against you, and then I will stop. So this pasuk isn't clear what it means, and there's like at least four different interpretations of what he was saying. We'll go through them one by one. And Shimshon said, if you'll do like this, ki im nikamti vachem, then I'll just take revenge against you, v'achar echtal, and then I'll stop. So Rashi says that what he was saying was, in tasun kazos, is this like a normal activity for you? Shemer gilin atem b'kach, maybe this is normal for you. Vos is isto shel zeh zeh, to give one person's wife to another. Is that a normal thing? That's all Rashi says. It's not so clear what that means. What is he saying? Again, all Rashi says is maybe it's normal for you to give one person's wife to someone else. And that's what he was saying, im ta'asun kazos, if you'll do something like this. So it could be understood that he's just saying, if this is normal activity for you, then I'm going to continue to take revenge against you. Right, how can you do such a thing? Is this normal? I'm going to take revenge against you. I'm going to attack you.
That's exactly what was said here. If you avenge a wrong done me, I will not bear animosity forever, but punish you only once more. And that they deserve a harsher punishment, but...
So, Mr. Tozav wants to understand Rashi, right? Rashi's not talking about what they did to the daughter and the father, right? Rashi's saying that you are accomplices in my wife being taken away from me, and so I'm going to still, even though you took revenge against the father and daughter, but I'm still going to take revenge against you, and then I'll stop. The Radak says that he was telling them that im tasun kazos, if you had at the beginning when they took my wife, if you had done this, gone and burned her and her father, so then that would have been good. But since you didn't do that until I sought justice against you, so then I'm going after you also. So similar to Rashi, he's upset that they approved of this action. But I guess in tasun kazos is, according to Rashi, those words mean if you'll do this, it meant if you allow a man to, a person's wife to be taken from him, then I'll take revenge against you. According to Radak, it's just referring to what they did to the father and daughter, and he's saying, im tasun kazos, had you done this earlier, then that would have been acceptable. But since you didn't burn them at the beginning, so then I'm going to take revenge against you. Others learn, but Judas David says, he was happy with them. He was telling you, im tasun kazos, if you did this, you burned the father and daughter, then, I'm appeased, I'm happy, I'm going to take it easy on you, I'm only going to hit you once more. That was, I'll take my revenge against you once, and then I'm done, and then I'll stop. But because you appeased me. I'm not finished with you yet. There's one more little, you know, attack against you, and then I'm finished with you. And the Malbim has a fourth approach, which is that he was telling them that you could have punished her in a different way. You could have fined her, you know, put her in jail, whatever, you know. You didn't have to kill her. There were other ways that you could have punished her. Or he saw it as an excuse, because he was saying, the Malbim says, if this is how you punish people, so I'm going to do as you do, and I'm going to punish you in the same way. If this is your way, you take people's lives, okay, deal. I'll take your lives also. That's how we work. How things work around here. Okay, if you do things like this, you burn them alive, you kill them, okay, I'll go after you, and I expect, you know, to be able to take your lives as well, and then I'll be done. And that's what he does. Pasuk Ches, the Pushti men. The Pushti, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. Pasuk Ches, Vayach Osam, Shok Al Yarech, Mako Gedola. And he hit them, he struck them, Shok Al Yarech, for two parts of the leg. The shok is the lower part of the leg, and the yarech is the higher part of the leg. And a maka gedova, he struck them a great hit. Vayered vayeshev besit sava etam, and he went down and he sat in the, like a nook of a rock. He found a place, I guess he was hiding, in a rock of etam. Shok al yarech, and the Farshim say that, really based on Targum Yonasan, that Shok al yarech is referring to the foot soldiers, the infantry, and the cavalry. That shok, which is the lower part of the leg, refers to the infantry, and yarech, the higher part of the leg, refers to those who were on horses, the cavalry. Although actually, that truth is that that's how Mitzvah David understands it, and Rashi does it the other way, that shok, the lower leg, refers to the cavalry because when you're on a horse, you don't lean on, I guess you don't use those, the upper muscles, you only use the lower muscle in the stirrup perhaps, so that, I think that's what Rashi means, that's why, what?
I think it's an idiom for hand-to-hand combat.
What, shok al yarech? What do you mean?
Hand-to-hand combat with short swords, which is what they use. And you'd be coming real close to your opponent, and you would put your cap on his thigh to try and maneuver him. Short range hand-to-hand combat. And I think that's what it means, but I have nothing more than a guess to support it. There's another passage somewhere in Knox that the sons of David, or the army of David, talking about this style of hand-to-hand combat. And they unwrap their legs with each other.
Gaining advantage.
And I think that's what this is an idiom for. And it also reminds me of Apal P.
Yeah, what do you have to say about that? I'm curious about that.
I think it's a pure idiom, but I mean, these kinds of expressions, nose on mouth, calf on thigh, I think they're just pure idiom.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. I mean, the thing is here that, right, most of the Mepharshim are going with the Targum Yonasan. It's interesting that even the Pashtanim, those who are going with Pshat, don't offer a more basic approach. The Radak has another shot here that has to do with running away and how you stumble when you run away. Also, I couldn't work out exactly what the Matthias what would be going on. He describes when you're fleeing, you fall on your face and your calf ends up on your thigh. I wasn't sure exactly how that was. I couldn't picture it.
You stuck them calf upon thigh.
All right.
Stuck them calf upon thigh. That sounds like calf and combat. My wife is finished now. Could easily be wrong.
Okay. It's a nice shot either way. Pasuk Chet. That's what we just did. Pasuk Tet. Vayahu Plishtim. And the Plishtim went up. Vayachanu B'Yehuda. And they camped in Yehuda. Vayinotu Balechi. And they spread out in this place, which was called Lechi, which we'll see why it, later we'll see why it gets that name. Lechi is a jawbone, which Shimshon is going to use as a weapon, and later it will really get that name of Lechi because of that episode. But already at this time, the Pasuk is referring to it as Lechi. Vayomru Ish Yehuda, and the men of Yehuda said, Rama Alisa Malenu, why have you come up against us, Plishtim? Why are you here? Vayomru, and the Plishtim said, Lesor es Shimshon Alino, we have come to capture Shimshon, Lesor Slo Kasher Asalonu, to do to him as he did to us. And now we have a very interesting little situation. Vayerdu Shloshes Alafim Ish Yehuda, and 3,000 men went down from Yehuda al Sif Sala Etam to this rock where Shimshon was hiding. Vayomru le Shimshon, and they said to Shimshon, Halo Yodata Kimoshlim Banu Plishtim. Don't you know that the Plishtim are ruling over us? Umazos al Sisalon, what have you done to us? Put us in a dire situation, Shimshon. Ayomer Lahem, and he said to them, Kasher Asuli, King Asisi Lahem, just as they did to me, that's what I did to them. We'll come back to that pasuk in a moment. Ayomru Lo Lamar, and they said to him, to say, Lo, no, Ki Asar Ne Esarcha, we are going to capture you, Unisanucha biyadam, and will hand you over into their hands, v'hameis lo nimisecha, and we're not going to kill you. Sorry, I skipped the pasuk. Pasuk yadeis, vayomru lo, and they said to him, v'esarcha yaradnu, we've come to lock you up, v'sitcha biyad plishtim, to hand you over to plishtim. Ayomrelam Shimshon, and Shimshon said to them, Hishavuli, swear to me, Pentifkun be atem, lest you yourselves strike at me, kill me. He wanted them to swear that they were indeed only going to hand him over to Plishtim, and that they weren't going to just tie him up and kill him themselves. Now, we have here a very interesting situation, where the Plishtim are basically threatening the Jewish people, and the people of Yehuda have a way, they have an out. Their out is to give over Shimshon. Now, are they allowed to hand him over? So this is a major discussion in Halacha. And really, it was a shaila that became very, these types of shailas, unfortunately, were very relevant in the Holocaust. And I think, I haven't gone through them, but I've heard that in the Tshuvos of Rav Oshri and Nima Makim, in the response from the depth, so he deals with these types of questions, I believe. I haven't seen them myself, but
he brings this down.
This comes into the discussion, as we're going to see. I don't know if he brings it, but in the general body of Halacha about this, so we're going to get into it in a little bit. whether they had the right to hand Shimshon over or not. So really, the Malbim already here brings in this discussion. And the Malbim here writes that the halacha is that if they come and they say, give us one person and we'll kill him, you're not allowed to give him over. What's that?
And we'll kill him.
Right. Give us one of your people or and we'll kill him. Otherwise, we'll kill everybody. You're not allowed to hand him over. However, if they say, give us a specific person, they don't say, give us one person. You know, if they say, just give us anyone, we want one guy, you choose, you're not allowed to give him over. If they say, give us Shimshon, give us one person, so that is a machlokes in the Yerushalmi between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says that, well, first it says you're allowed to give them. You're allowed to give them. If they specify someone, you're allowed to give them. Reish Lakish says that's only if that person is already chayav misa. Anyway, because the example of this is another story, which Mirz Hashem will get to one day in Sefer Melachim. Shmuel. In Shmuel Beis, I think, with Sheva ben Bichri, who rebelled against David HaMelech and holed himself up in a city, and David's army went and laid siege to the city, and they demanded Sheva ben Bichri, and they sent him out with, well, they sent his head out, basically. And we learn from there that that would be permitted. But Reish Lakish says that's only because he was anyways Chayav Misa, because he was a Morid B'Malchus, he had rebelled against the king. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, even if you're not Chayav Misa, once they specify a specific person, you're allowed to hand him over. The Rambam paskins like Reish Lakish. Now you're only allowed to hand him over if he's Chayav Misa. So then, that being the case, Shimshon here was seemingly not Chayav Misa. Even, you know, he hadn't done anything that was Chayav Misa, that he would be liable to be killed. So they should not be allowed to hand him over. That's what would seem to be the halacha. However, says the Rambam, says the Malbim here, that no, when Reish Lakish or the Rambam paskin that you can only hand him over if he's Chayav Misa, it's not only within halacha that he has to be Chayav Misa, it could also be to the kingdom. If the ruling kingdom, the Plishtim in this case, you know, Paskin, they rule that this person has to be killed, that would fall into Reish Lakish's guidelines of somebody who's Chayav Misa, and you'd be allowed to hand him over.
So it's either Chayav ke halacha or Chayav ke...
The laws of the kingdom. Yes. So, and that, says the Malbim, was a justification for handing him over. Now, he adds in another point, which is that if someone is a rode, that he's bringing danger upon the entire community. So that is also a justification for handing someone over. That's paskin by the Taz in Yeridea. And that would have also been a justification for handing him over. So, yeah. So.
That's a very loose justification.
Right, I guess because, you know.
All they have to say is they'll make war against him.
Well, I think the difference is if somebody has done something to incite them, or then, you know, and he's causing the issues, then you can hand him over. But just because they, you know, the enemy claims that it's because of him, but he didn't actually do anything, then that would not be a justification to hand him over.
So he has to have done mischief.
Right, mischief. So the Malbim says that that's what they were saying to him. First they said to him, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Halo yadata ki moshulim banu plishtim. You know that the plishtim are ruling over us. So why have you done this to incite them? you're a rodef, and we have the right to hand you over. To that, Shimshon responds, Kasher Osuli King Asisi Lahem, I didn't think that it would come to this. I wasn't doing this. I was just, this is between me and them. I didn't think that they would come and attack the whole people. They wronged me. I wronged them back. This is between me and them. So I had no expectation that it would come to this, and therefore you can't consider me a roding. But it seems that they still had justification because he was Chayav Misa, although the Malbim doesn't read that into the Pesukim, he understands that that was their justification for handing him over because he was Chayav Misa to the Malchus, he was Chayav Misa to the kingdom.
Thank you, Rabbi.